Hi, it's Mike. It's McCorgan here at Audio Boo. It's Thursday, the 16th of April, 12:15 in the PM now. Just left there on the motorway, the M8 heading east. Just listening to some, may recognise it, Classic FM. From Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, Sinbad. Beautiful music. I'll turn it down again. The reason I'm driving towards Edinburgh now, I just noticed that I've just slightly crept over 70 miles per hour, so I'll be towing that down. Put it in cruise control immediately, that's us fixed for the journey. I'm heading through to see my cousin Stephen again through in the Marie Curie Centre just off of Fairmile Head. Frogston Road is the name of the road that it's on, just off the Fairmile Head area of the town. And Stephen's, some of you will know, is dying from cancer basically. So because we are heading up north tomorrow, first thing tomorrow morning, I made my mind up to go through and see Stephen this afternoon. As soon as I got a break in the turmoil at home with whatever decoration and carpet fitter media, I made my mind up to go through. So that was the plan anyway. But I got a phone call this morning about, I think it was about 10 or 11. And it was from Stephen's daughter, my niece, Louise. And she sounded a bit, well, she sounded weary and tired, but that's natural because she's been spending, and she does work, by the way, she's been spending most nights overnight sitting by her dad's bed. So I wondered why she'd phoned this morning. In actual fact, I thought it was the ultimate news, if you know what I mean. And as soon as I heard her talking, I says, by the way, I'm coming through this afternoon, early afternoon. So she says, oh, that's fantastic. So she went on to say that I think she just wanted to tell someone else that while they were sitting last night, she was sitting last night, her dad had stopped breathing completely. And he has been in terrible pain, she says, recently. The drugs just aren't working. So she had called the nurse, and the nurse had said that she wasn't sure what to do, because obviously Louise had said, look, do I phone my mum and the family and say, look, you better get in, because I think my dad's gone, or just about gone. So the nurse didn't know what to do either, because she says that, she explained to Louise that, she says, this happens and we just don't know. So I basically said to her, don't get too upset about this, because, and the reason that I was explaining this to Louise is the fact, because I went through the whole thing with my dad. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And I explained to her that this could happen for quite some time yet. And I wouldn't even hazard a guess for how long. It could be a day, it could be 2 weeks, it could be a month. You just don't know. And I went through it with my dad because, when he got to the same stage or a similar stage that Stephen is now at, he would stop breathing completely for what seems like an age, but in reality it's maybe only a couple of minutes or 2 or 3 minutes. But you try holding your breath for 2 or 3 minutes. And we went through that. I don't know how many times that I got a phone call from my sister, or one of my sisters, because my other sister came up from England, who they were taking turns. I was working at the time, and they were taking turns at sharing his bedside or individually, and like that, relieving the other one to get away home for a bit. And also at that time, I remember, we had my wife's brother and his wife were over for a few weeks from Australia, and they were staying with us. And so we had, you know, had commitments there as well. And so I explained to her that this the breathing stopping for what seems an age is a natural thing. It's basically just the body taking its time to shut down. And but she asked her if she was going to head home now at that point and get some sleep. She says yes. She says I don't know what to do. And I says, look, you have to go home. You have to go home. You have to take a step away and get some sleep and do your washing and your dishes and get some nice tea at home. And because she's got her own family, and, you know, go and do that. And I know what was behind what she was saying was because she was frightened that she would leave the hospital and then get a phone call to say she'd missed her dad, passed away. She said, you can't do that. You just can't do that, because you are putting immense pressure on yourself. And then if he does pass away and you're not there, don't be putting guilt on yourself, because that's what people do. They feel so damn guilty that they weren't there at that moment. There is no way you can nail down that moment, I explained to her. And so don't even consider blaming yourself. I know how I felt when my dad died. I'd got so many phone calls, as I said. Basically the message was like, you better get up here quick. And it was usually my older sister. And of course I'd make my excuses to Mary's family and say, look, I better shoot up. It's only about 10 minutes away from where I stayed now. And I shot away up and got to my dad's bedside, and basically false alarm, he was breathing again. And so I'd sit with him for a while and we'd have a wee blether, and then I'd say, okay, like, let me know, and I'd come back down. And that happened so many times. So what happened was that my dad again got a phone call, and my sister says, you better get up here right away. And I asked the question again, you mean right away, or do you mean you know, should I get up very, very soon? And she says, no, you better get up right now. So I thought, okay, right, I'll be up. So I grabbed the keys, made my apologies again, jumped in the car, shot away up. And as soon as I got to the hospice and walked towards his wee room where they were, and I could see faces, and I knew right away he'd gone. Yes, he'd gone. And I remember saying to myself, you know, if only they, and I wasn't blaming them, so don't think I was blaming them, if only they had phoned me, if only I'd got the phone call, maybe, because they said he died. Basically, they had left the room, the nurses were going to do something at the bed, and says, you should go and take a wee coffee break in the sitting room and go tend to your dad. Or, you know, at that time, you know, they always call the patient by their name, so they would say, you know, we'll look after Pat. Dad's name is Patrick, obviously. We'll look after Pat. Got something to do. You go and have a coffee and come back. When they came back, basically 10 minutes later, he had died. And so I was saying, you know, like, if only I'd got a phone call, maybe we'd have, you know, and I made it. But I'll be perfectly honest with you, I never did blame myself. I never did feel guilty. Trying to find the right word or expression. I was sorry, basically, you know, that I wasn't there when he finally died. You know, when you've been there at his bedside, when so many times the party's died, but he's not. And then the time he has and you're not there. So you get that kind of feeling. But it wasn't guilt. So so I've been through all that. But by no means... And I never want to be an expert in this kind of thing. I've been through it once. I'd never want to go through it again. So I tried to explain as best I could to Louise how she has to cope with this, how they all have to cope with it. So we'll see how he is sharing that. But, oh well, you know. Many people and families go through this every day. Every day in life there are families going through this turmoil. And I don't mean sudden death, I mean the long, dragged out physical and mental torment, if you like, of a loved one dying in pain and slowly. And it's a very, you know, it's a very difficult thing, you know, to deal with. So all I can do is try and give them some advice and some comfort, help, doctor. So there you go. So I'm heading through to see Stephen, obviously. So that's me joined. I'm off the M8 motorway. I've now joined the 720 Edinburgh Southern Bypass. And really, I'm only about, well, less than 10 minutes away now from... So it doesn't take that long to get through here, if you don't get held up on the motorway, of course. And as I head south in the bypass, I'm looking at the beautiful Pentland Hills. And this is the eastern end of the Pentland Hills, where the last hill runs down to, you know, well, if you want to call it road level. And there's a ski slope right in the end, but it's an artificial one. These hills, unless we get really bad weather, are not high enough really for serious snow, so it's always been an artificial ski slope in the end of the hills. Hill End, it's called. Hill End Ski Slope. Just a bit of geography for you. Okay, going now, and I'll update.